Our second reading today comes from John 1, beginning at verse 14. And the Word became flesh and lived among us, and we have seen His glory, the glory as of a Father's only Son, full of grace and truth. John testified to Him and cried out, "This was He of whom I said, 'He who comes after me ranks ahead of me, because He was before me.' From His fullness we have all received grace upon grace. The law indeed was given through Moses. Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God. It is God, the only Son, who is close to the Father's heart, who has made Him known." The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. You may be seated. Good morning and welcome again to worship today. As I mentioned a couple times here, today is the second Sunday in Advent, which again is this time of year when we prepare for the coming of Christmas. And actually the word Advent comes from the Latin word meaning coming or arrival. And so what this season of Advent is all about is preparing ourselves to once again celebrate, to once again remember the coming, the arrival of Jesus into the world. And so we'll be spending the next couple of weeks focusing in on this. You know, one of the things that's kind of interesting about Christmas is that it's the only time of year when you'll hear kind of miracle-like language talked about within society at large, even among those who are not Christians, right? All over the place this time of year, you'll hear people talking about the magic of Christmas, the miracle of Christmas. For example, movies are one good example. If you did a search online for Miracle Christmas movies, you'll find a lot of movies. So here are a couple examples. Of course, we have The Miracle on 34th Street. I also found a movie called The Christmas Miracle, or Once Upon a Christmas Miracle, or A Christmas Tree Miracle, A Mrs. Miracle Christmas. There was even get this, A Karate Christmas Miracle. Harry, I wouldn't know how it is, but it doesn't look all that great to me. But ironically, right, none of these movies have anything to do with Jesus. But at Christmas, right, everything is possible for a week with the magic and the miracle of Christmas. Well, today I want to remind us that Christmas really is about a miracle. It's about a real miracle that actually happened. And not only that, but everything hinges on this miracle, right? If this miracle happened, then the Christian faith is true. Then life is full of meaning, and all other miracles are possible. But if this miracle is not true, then all the other kind of tenets of the Christian faith are put into question, and we're lost, and we're without hope, without meaning, and really no other miracles are possible. And so today we'll be thinking about what this miracle is, what it does, and how we can get it, how we can be a part of it. The miracle is found in our reading today from John chapter 1, verse 14. Look at it again with me. It said this: "And the Word became flesh and lived among us, and we have seen His glory, the glory as of a Father's only Son, full of grace and truth." Right? The Word became flesh and lived among us. That's the miracle. Now, I'll tell you right off the bat, the Word that's talking about there is Jesus. Right? So let's think about what this means then. John uses that term Word there, capital W, which is the Greek word logos. And back at the very beginning of chapter 1 in John, he gave us more information about the word. You might remember this. We often read it at Christmas Eve. He wrote, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through Him, and without Him not one thing came into being. What has come into being in Him was life, and the life was the light of all people." Now again, John uses that term Word there, and he's using it to talk about Jesus. And just look at what all those verses tell us about the Word, about Jesus. In the beginning was the Word. And what John means by this is the Word was not created like everything else. He was there at the beginning. Jesus was there at the beginning. And John goes further. The Word was with God. The Word was God. All things came into being through Him. Right? John says it plainly. When all things were created, Jesus was there with God, creating with Him, because He is God. And like God, he has existed for eternity, right? We're taught, we get two of the three parts of the Trinity here. God is one God in three persons, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Now, for those of you who have been maybe Christians for a while, you have heard this and you might think, you know, is this, it doesn't seem like a big deal, right? We know Jesus is God. But, you know, in the early church, they had to wrestle with this for years and years as they kind of developed this theology. Back in the early 300s AD, they had to deal with something called the Arian controversy. You see, this guy Arius, he came out and said, Jesus was created by God. And therefore, he's not eternal like God and not on the same level as God. And, you know, you can't blame Arius too much. He was concerned with the oneness of God. He wanted to make sure Christianity didn't fall into believing in three gods. And here's where I'm going to get a little technical today. This debate came down to language and two words that were very similar, but also very, very different. I'll throw them up there for you. Homoiousios and homoousios. If you notice, there's just one little letter difference between these two Greek words. There's a little I in that first one. Now, stay with me here, right? I know you may be struggling now. This is not the time to fall asleep, okay? Back in the fourth century, this stuff was all the rage. If you found the wrong side of this, you could get yourself exiled, which Arius was eventually, or even burned at the stake. So homoiousios is what Arius believed in. And what this word means is of like substance or essence, of like substance. He believed that Jesus, God's Son, was like the same substance as God the Father. Right? It's like us and our parents, right? I am like the same substance as my parents, you could say, right? I have very similar DNA to them. I look like them in some ways. I have similar traits and characteristics. I've noticed one day I looked over at my dad and we were both sitting the exact same way, like at this concert, and I was like, oh, wow, okay. Right, so I'm very much like my parents, share the similar substance, but I do not share the exact same DNA as them. And Arius said, this is Jesus. He is of similar substance to God. But not everyone agreed with Arius. In particular, a guy named Athanasius. If you want to, you're looking for baby names, Athanasius. Athanasius came along and said, Arius, you're wrong. What you're saying doesn't fit with the Bible, doesn't fit with John 1, which again says this, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Right? According to this passage, Jesus wasn't created by God because he was God. And so Athanasius said, no, we don't believe in homoiousios, we believe in homoousios, which means of the same substance or the same essence. Jesus was not of similar substance to God. He was of the same substance, right? And so when they're writing things like the Athanasian Creed, they're hashing out this kind of language, this very important language about who Jesus is, right? He was God. Now, you might be like, Pastor Peter, why are you sharing all this? What's the big deal? Well, you have to know this makes all the difference in the world. It's a big deal, right? That little I changes everything. Because if Jesus isn't fully God, if he's not of the same substance, the same essence as God, then the miracle that happens at Christmas is really, really no miracle at all. Because the miracle at Christmas is that the Word became flesh. Jesus took on human flesh. But if Jesus isn't God, then how is that really a miracle if he becomes human, right? Then Jesus isn't really much different than you and I. Right, the miracle at Christmas is that God himself in Jesus took on human flesh. He was incarnated in a man. He became both fully God and fully man. And other places in Scripture confirm this. We heard this in our first reading today. He, that's Jesus, is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. For in him all things in heaven and on earth were created, things visible and invisible. Whether thrones or dominions or rulers or powers, all things have been created through him and for him. He himself is before all things, and in him all things hold together. He is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, so that he might come to have first place in everything. And then pay special attention to this verse. For in him all the fullness of God was pleased to dwell. Right? In Jesus, the fullness of God dwells. And Jesus took on human flesh, right? That's a miracle, and an incomprehensible one at that. Now, what does this miracle do then? Why does it matter? Let me read again verse 14. Pay special attention to that second part. And the Word became flesh and lived among us, and we have seen his glory, the glory as of a Father's only Son, full of grace and truth. Right? Remember, John is writing this, and he is a disciple of Jesus. And he says, we have seen his glory, the glory as of a Father's only Son, full of grace and truth. And Pastor Timothy Keller, he asked a really good question here. And that is, how is it that Jesus was able to get his Jewish disciples to believe he was God? Think about that. Since childhood, right, every Jewish boy, every Jewish girl had it drilled into them again and again, there is only one God. There is only one God. In Judaism, there is no other place for multiple gods. Now, for Greeks, for their Greek neighbors, for non-Jews, that's no big deal, right? They were used to multiple gods. Every city, every region had its own gods, but not Jews. That was not even a possibility for them. And so how do they come to believe then that Jesus was God? Even before he was resurrected, they came to believe this. Well, look again at verse 14. We have seen his glory, the glory as of a Father's only Son, full of grace and truth. The disciples, as they were with him, living with him, seeing him, they saw his glory. They saw the glory of God within Jesus while he was alive. They saw that he was full of grace, full of truth. I like the way Timothy Keller puts it. He says, when they looked at him, they saw perfection. They saw virtues that had never been combined before. Tenderness without any weakness. Strength without heavy-handedness. Humility without timidity. Firm convictions, but utter approachability. Passion without prejudice. Power without insensitivity. And never a false step. Right? They looked at Jesus and the things he said and did, and they thought, this guy's different. This has to be God. And it wasn't just the miracles he performed. I mean, after all, prophets in the Old Testament did many of the miracles he did. It was his perfect wisdom, his perfect love and virtue and sinless life. Right? No mere human could do this. You know, all of us know that maybe not now, but during the summer, if you're to look up at the sun on a clear day, right, you can't really do it, right? Even now, I guess in the winter, you can't do it. All you see is brightness and kind of pain, right, before you have to look away, right? It's overpowering. But if you're to use some kind of filter or lens, you know, maybe on a camera or a telescope, even solar eclipse glasses, you can do it. With certain lenses, certain filters, you can see much more of the detail of the sun, right? Those are real pictures of the sun through filters. You can see filaments and flares and sunspots. Well, Timothy Keller says, when you look at Jesus, you're looking at God through the filter of a human nature. And you see things you can't believe, right? In Jesus, they saw God. You can't look at God on his own, right? He's too bright, too glorious for us, right? Moses found that out. But in Jesus, we can. And in Jesus, they saw the beauty, they saw the power, the character of God. Let's look at verse 16. From his fullness, we have all received grace upon grace. In other words, from this miracle then, from this God-man, we receive grace upon grace, miracles upon miracles, blessings upon blessings. Right? And we could spend hours talking about all the grace, all the blessings that Jesus has accomplished for us. I'll just mention two for you today. First, and this is probably the one we're most familiar with, Jesus, he's the answer to our problem of sin and guilt. Right? We know that our sin has separated us from God. But in his crucifixion, Jesus takes our sin upon himself and takes the punishment that was upon us. But we have to know, only a God-man could do this for us, right? It has to be a human who takes on the sins of humanity and also who has the ability to suffer and die. But it has to be God because his death is of an infinite value, right? Only the life of God can be valuable enough to cover all the sins of humanity in every generation for all time. And so in Jesus, who is both God and man, we have the one person who could die and take away our sin for us. And so if you have guilt in your life, if you have sin that you can't overcome, if it's crushing you, come to Jesus and know that in him, the infinite God died for you so that you can be forgiven, you can be saved, you can be given new life. That's one blessing this Christmas miracle bestows upon us. Here's the second one I'll mention. Right, you might have wondered, you know, why does John call Jesus the Word? Again, in Greek, it's the term logos. Well, in Greek culture, this was a significant term at the time. The word logos can also mean reason or logic. And in the culture of that day, one of the main pursuits of Greek philosophers was to discover the great logos, the rationale, the overarching principle that governs the universe and gave meaning, gave purpose to life. Greek philosophers were constantly debating, trying to discover what's the logos of life? What's the meaning of life? What's the rationale of life? And so it's no coincidence then that John opens his gospel by saying, in the beginning was the Word, was the logos. Right, a large part of John's audience was probably Gentiles, Greeks, who knew this discussion of the logos. And John is saying, I have the answer to your pursuit of the meaning of life. Logos is a person. Meaning is found in a person. Purpose is found in a person, in Jesus Christ. The Logos became flesh, and he lived among us. When you discover Jesus, you discover why you're here. In Jesus, you meet the God who created you, who gave you life, who loves you, who died for you, who forgives you and saves you and gives your life purpose. And so knowing that, what will you do with that? Will you live into that? Will Jesus become your Logos? Will he become your purpose in life? Will he be the one to give you meaning? Will he be the reason you get up in the morning? Will he be your highest priority in life? And will you put your faith in him? At Christmas, an incredible miracle happened. The Word became flesh and lived among us. And this miracle happened for you. God took on flesh for you to save you, to give you a new life with purpose, with meaning. It's a free gift for each of us. Receive this gift through faith this Christmas. Let's pray.